I'm Lewis.
And I'm Alexi.
And we are back, and it hasn't been 2 months.
It's only been like, what, like a little over a week?
I think 2 weeks, yeah.
Man, time flies.
Yeah, it does. But we are back, and with part two, we knew that we know some people personally who listen to this podcast, and they're not very happy with us when we do a two-parter. So, so we're back, and we're going to do this. Let's see, what, your hair looks really good today.
Thank you. So does yours.
I'm wearing a hat. You can't even see it.
Well, your hat head looks good today.
Thank you. Today, I'm going to talk about not only a coffee, but a coffee shop in the Quad Cities here that is brand new and that I really like. And I've been wanting to talk about this for a long time, but because of the sparse nature of our episodes lately, I haven't had a chance to. But the coffee shop that I would like to talk about is Coffee Apothecary in Bettendorf, right in the building. If someone was wanting a reference point, there's a pizza place that used to be in the same building called Crust. It's actually getting changed to like a tapas restaurant or something like that. But it you go to Davenport, you're on 53rd, intersection of 53rd and Utica Ridge, and you head a little farther east, and then you're going to see signs for this place called Coffee Apothecary. And it's the idea, it's a very quaint place. It's the wallpaper is really old school, vintagey, kind of dark colors, real rich colors. And the theme of the place is, well, so apothecary, I think, is like an old school word for a pharmacy.
Yeah.
And so there's these little beakers around that have plants in them, and there are these medical schematics on the wall of
various medical
things. Yeah. But the idea is that coffee is kind of an old school way to be healthy. And I think that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
Or to give health to your body. Sure. I know I use it in that capacity.
I haven't been to this place yet, but I really want to go though.
Every time I go inside,
I think you got me a coffee from there one time.
I did.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will get to that in a minute, the reason why it was really good, because that's why we're all here today. But they do have a drive-through. They open at, I think, 7 in the morning until mid-afternoon hours. I think the hours are kind of shifting as they sort of figure out what their sweet spot is for being open and when they can get customers there. But they do have a drive-through if you're on your way to work and you're somewhere in the neighborhood. But I really enjoy going inside just because it's a very cozy atmosphere inside. So it's got couches and chairs and a good place to study if you're a student or just hang out if you're a person that hangs out. Whenever I'm there, I usually don't have time to hang out, but I always wish I did because that's fun to do.
So hang out there sometime.
Yeah. They got breakfast sandwiches. They've got those little peanut butter balls kind of thing if you need some protein on the go. And they've got really good, and when I'm at a coffee shop, I don't usually do menu drinks. I don't usually do lattes, and I just like to try the coffee, the drip coffee. But there's a drink called now I'm going to forget the name of it. It's like, in the early 2000s, these used to be really popular, where they would put carbonated water with cream.
Oh, like a Italian soda.
An Italian soda. It's I can't remember the name of it because it's a very the name is very much pharmaceutical related.
Okay.
Coffee apothecary related. imposter syndrome. I think it's called the imposter syndrome.
Okay.
So it's really, really good.
Did you get that for me?
I think I did.
Okay, yeah. It was really good.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm not usually a fan of those menu drinks, but I thought I would recommend that since I enjoyed it so much. And hey, it's a local coffee shop. They just started. They're working hard to bring the best coffee they possibly can to the Quad Cities. And so I think we should support them. And we are supporting them today because I got a box of Onyx coffee. I feel like I always talk about Onyx coffee. I really fell in love.
Have we done that once before, or was it twice before?
Only once.
Okay.
For Onyx. I think it was season two, but it might have been season one. I'm not sure. Okay. They sent us a coffee. It's a blend, Ethiopia and Guatemala blend. It's called Geometry. And it's one of their mainstays. It's a light roast. It's a It's a more of a modern style of roasting, and it's just very, very popular. It's on the lower end of what they charge for their coffee. So we had the geometry, and I was just blown away. I remember when we tasted it, I just couldn't believe how good it was. And I had never heard of it before. You know, I had heard of Intelligentsia and yeah. Stumptown and all these famous places, but I just hadn't heard of Onyx before, O-N-Y-X. And sure enough, they've been around for a while. But it came up in conversation when I was interviewing my friend Tony. I asked him, and I didn't give him any cues or anything. I said, Tony, what are, you know, if you said three of your top, you know, roasters that you respect the most for doing really high quality specialty coffee. And he mentioned Onyx, based in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which you don't expect coffee to come from. You expect Seattle, Chicago, maybe somewhere in California or New York, but not Fayetteville, Arkansas. It is a college town. So there's a lot of coffee drinkers there. Sure. And, but wow, I was just super impressed. So imagine my delight when I find not only that there's a new coffee shop in town called Coffee Apothecary, but that the coffee that they are brewing and selling is none other than Onyx Coffee from Fayetteville.
You must have been so delighted.
I was very delighted, and I went in and I told them that. I think they were kind of like, oh, okay, yeah. They did speak very highly of them, though. They said that Onyx is one of these companies that once you develop sort of a, I forget what you call it, when you as a coffee shop, you sort of have a contract with a roaster to say, okay, we're going to buy coffee from you and sell only that. And some roasters do, Onyx sent a team of people and they kind of coached everyone on, this is the best way to do this. I think they might've been down there for a workshop like that. But anyway, a very high level of the roaster interacting with the retail side of things to give the best representation of the coffee, which is really smart because, I mean, you can roast the best coffee in the world, but if someone brews it, I mean, I've had this happen all the time, not at this place, but a lot of places that I drink coffee at, it's like, okay, I know that you have good coffee, but this doesn't, that what I just ordered and got, you know, as a drip coffee, it just doesn't taste good. There's a lot of things you can do wrong that sort of like the water you use, when we do this podcast, the coffee we're about to drink, and every single time that we have coffee, it's always whole bean.
Yeah.
It's always as fresh as it can possibly be. So it's been roasted. It's not ground Folgers.
Well, one time it was, but.
Well, that was on purpose because we were trying to be funny. But yeah, we get whole bean coffee. It's freshly roasted. We rinse the coffee filter because you do get a papery taste, flavor in your coffee if you don't rinse your filter.
See, I would never think to do that if it wasn't for you.
You've opened my eyes. and then we do a pour over. So we have more control over the heat. We use a hot pot to get the water to boiling and just let it rest so it's just under boiling. And then we brew it to extract the maximum amount of flavor out of the coffee. And that's what we do every single time. And that's how we get really, really, you know, that's how we get the most out of these really good coffees that we get to taste. So a little bit about Onyx. I remember the first time that we did a podcast on them, I talked about how on their website, they are very, they give a lot of detail about their the financial side of the coffee to the point where they say how much they pay the farm per pound, which is really hard to do because that changes a lot. And you risk people saying, oh, that's not enough because they don't understand what that number means, you know, in context of a lot of things. But they are very, very open about that. And so I was looking at the coffee that we're going to taste today. I was looking at the profile of this coffee on their website. And there was this little button that said view sustainability report. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll click on this. And there's this whole page about the materials that they use to package the coffee. It says the mailers, the things that they mail. If you order coffee directly from Onyx, they'll send it to you in this kind of plastic-looking mailer. The mailers from start to finish, mailers are eco-friendly, certified home compostable. With an average breakdown of 180 days or 90 days in commercial composting conditions. Like the detail of doing that, you know, of going to that length to say on your website, like how many days it takes your mailers to break down in compost is just, I'm very impressed by it. The boxes. So this is.
Does it say what they're made out of?
Polymer, biopolymer, renewable plant-based materials.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
And what is, I said something about the ink somewhere else here. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't look at a box like this and say this is fully compostable, but it actually
I like this is. Box a lot.
Yeah, the boxes, are it's very waxy.
Yeah.
And embossed. It's a beautiful, it's some of the most beautiful packaging I've ever seen in coffee. Boxes that are made from unbleached coated paperboard, low density, moisture resistant, high yield, and provide strength and durability using less fiber. Food grade certified and easily recyclable. Talks about the company that makes them. So just the, again, the detail. Roasting, the roasting process. Early in 2020, we finalized installation of solar panels on the roof of our headquarters, which has taken the entire roastery and production area off the grid to operate fully on solar-powered energy, which is just amazing. I mean, it's really, really cool that that they would go to that length to save energy and make stuff that... I mean, I'm not going to take a box like this and just throw it out the window and let it compost on the side of the road. I will probably never throw it away when I've thrown many other things away. And Alexi knows that I don't really throw, I like to throw things away.
Oh, he loves to throw things
like to get
away.
Rid of things. But boxes like this that smell good.
That's something that I would be like, oh no, this is a good box. Yeah, we can use it for something. But like the fact that you want to keep it is like a big deal.
It's a big deal. Well, hey, I've been blabbing about this coffee. So it's from El Salvador. It's called El Salvador Santa Rosa Honey. It's from the northern Chalatenango Mountains in the northern tip of El Salvador and is one of their favorite annual offerings. It's the owner is their good friend Jorge Rivera, who they have been working with for 6 years. So let's give it a try.
All right.
Cheers. Alexi's eyes just like popped open. Alexi, wow. Did you ever think that coffee could taste this good when you first started drinking coffee? Like, this is so good.
Dang, this is amazing.
Yeah. Okay, what are you tasting? Tell me.
Like everything.
The whole, all man, it's world, world peace.
Definitely some kind of like dessert item.
Yeah.
Like, what? I was going to say caramel.
Oh. well, one of the tasting notes is Demerara sugar, which is actually basically sugar in the raw, that kind of thing.
Okay.
I'd never heard of Demerara sugar.
I haven't either. But there's, I do, it there definitely is like a sweetness.
Yeah.
For sure.
The two places I see foods that I've never heard of before are boxes of coffee like this and also Chopped.
Oh yeah.
Remember, you know, the Chopped show, how and on Food Network, how they'll give these weird ingredients. Yeah. It'll be like, chefs, you have chicken thigh, polenta, Plenko potatoes. And all the chefs will be like, what the heck are Plenko potatoes? But one chef is like, oh, my mother is Grecian and she's from Greece and
Chopped should make a coffee, like a brand of coffee, and have their tasting notes be like really weird things.
They should. I would love that. So Demerara sugar is one of the notes, and I just learned that word.
What are the
other? Do you have any other ideas?
Well, I mean, obviously you know the tasting notes, but like without thinking about them, what do you taste?
I don't know if I would have tasted this without seeing the notes, but I do taste rose.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Like a flowery rose flavor. When I was right after college, I had some roommates and one of them was a foodie and he made a Mediterranean food when I, or it might have been specifically Arabic food. But he made rose water. Ooh. And that's apparently a thing in some.
What is that?
Just rose flavored water. You literally dunk. It's like tea, like rose tea. You dunk rose petals in water, and it absorbs the flavor. So, so I have drank things that taste like rose before.
Yeah.
The other tasting note is dark chocolate.
Okay.
As well as Concord grape. Oh. I don't know if I would have gotten that, but the thing on the website says that that's the most forward note in the cup. That Concord grape is the strongest one. So.
Man.
It's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Could drink it all day.
Yeah.
It's also very caffeinated. If, I had this morning and it really got my heart going.
Okay. So it's a good thing to drink at 7 p.m.
It's 7 p.m. right now. So I made a very small amount for each of us, but we'll still probably be very hyper. So.
Man. Well, I'm definitely going to have to stop by this place. I'm going to work.
Yeah. Anyone in the Quad Cities, please stop by Coffee Apothecary in Bettendorf and check it out.
Yeah.
The coffee that they usually, so I, this is obviously a single origin coffee.
Right.
They do not brew, I don't think they do pour overs.
They don't actually like.
Yeah. So they sell it retail. So you can buy it and make it at home. And that's what I do. But the coffee, the one that they have on drip all the time is called Southern Weather.
Okay.
And that's just more of a traditional style roast. And it's a darker blend, which is very, very common for any coffee shop because the majority of people who ask for drip coffee are going to want dark roast coffee. Right. And that's a function of Starbucks taking over the world and influencing everybody. But this is the stuff that I really, when I see this stuff, you know, at just roasted a couple weeks ago on their retail shelf, it's like, wow, that's really cool. So a couple extra bucks to buy it, but it's, in my opinion, it's worth it.
It's worth it. It's really good.
And that is the featured coffee for today's episode of Coffee with Crime.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for doing all that.
Glad you enjoyed it. Yeah. I loved your facial expression when you took a sip. You were very, you looked very happy.
It was very good.
Yeah.
Extremely good.
Well, I can't wait anymore. Part two.
All right. Here we go. Should I give a recap of part one? Or
that would be great.
I should. Okay. I'm going to need to
obviously, I remember everything.
Look over my notes a little.
Someone else
might have forgotten. Because there's a lot going on in this case. So last week we talked about Peter London, who, this is a, well, we said it was a Danish crime, sort of. First part, well, I don't want to give too much away, but anyway, this guy is from Denmark.
Okay.
So, but anyway, this guy was born in the early 70s. You know, he lived with his parents in Denmark. During the, I believe it was the early 80s, his parents started to fall on hard times financially. His father became ill. So they moved to Florida.
I thought he was born in the U.S.
No, he was born in Denmark.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they moved to Florida in the mid-80s, early 80s. And then the family moved around a lot. This family was always moving everywhere. And eventually, the father and mother separated. Peter went with his father on this long road trip around the U.S. They finally came back and landed in Miami, where Peter's father and mother reconnected. So they were, you know, trying to give things another shot. However, when Peter was a teenager, he started to kind of take a bad path. You know, he was doing drugs and doing bad things. He had a weird relationship with his mom. They were always fighting. And, you know, she wasn't very good to him. And I don't think he was to her either. And eventually, when he was 19, one night, he ended up strangling his mother and killing her. And him and his father drove her body to a beach and buried her on the beach.
Never a good idea.
Never. We talked about that last
week. You shouldn't kill anyone. But if you do.
If you do.
God forbid, do not bury them on a beach.
Do not. It's a bad idea.
Unless you want to get caught.
Yeah. They fled to Canada, and her body was found just a couple, I think it's just a couple months, or no, I think it was like 7 months later when...
7 months. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it was, I don't know. It was several months after. Yeah. So eventually the police catch them in Canada, bring them back to the U.S., where they go on trial. And Peter ends up getting sentenced to prison. His father also is sentenced for as being an accomplice, but he gets a shorter sentence. And they're both to be deported back to Denmark when their sentences are served. So after 2 years, his father goes back to Denmark, and Peter is still in the U.S. He ends up going on this show called The American Dream. It's like a Danish documentary series about Danish people living in the U.S. And he ends up being very popular amongst ladies. So
yeah, I looked at pictures of his face when I was looking for thumbnails for our episode last week, and I didn't think he was very attractive.
Okay, in those where he has his face painted?
No, like all the pictures of him.
Oh.
I thought he just... He wasn't what I had in mind as far as like this handsome Danish person.
I think you need to watch this documentary.
Okay.
Because there's some scenes where he is attractive.
I have to take your word for it.
Okay. Anyway, so he ends up attracting the attention of a lot of women. One of the women he ends up marrying while he's in prison. And then due to overcrowding, the prison decides to release him early. I think he only serves like 7 years of his 20-year sentence.
Yeah.
And now we are at the point where he is being released from prison and he is going to return to Denmark.
Yeah. And just what I remember is that he wrote his family letters specifically saying how much he was looking forward to killing someone.
Yes.
And they chose him to get released due to overcrowding. I feel like there must have been some people that did not write to their loved ones about how eager they were to shed blood.
That whole thing with him like saying he wanted to get out to kill again reminds me of, have you ever seen that episode of Family Guy where they're making fun of that scene in Shawshank Redemption? Where no. Red is being interviewed by the parole board.
No.
And he's like, if I ever get out, I'll kill again. And they're like, approved.
Yeah, that's exactly that's like what it's
this. I was thinking about this, so I wonder if they just wanted to get rid of him and send him back to Denmark. It's like, not our problem
was
anymore.
There an extradition out for him from
No, well,
Denmark?
I mean, once he was done with his sentence, he was going to be deported.
Deported,
back.
Right.
So maybe
okay,
they were
so he
like,
was probably on the short list because he wasn't a
citizen,
right?
Someone else's problem.
Yeah. Or maybe he was a citizen.
I don't know because he moved here when he was young, but...
Well, I'm sure once you're imprisoned, you lose your...
Yeah,
you know,
I don't.
Your rights.
Yeah,
for,
I really don't
to,
know
to
how
stay,
that works, but...
Especially back then. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Thank you for catching us up.
Yes,
so,
you're welcome.
So when you left off, I think
he's getting out of prison.
Getting out of prison, joining up with this woman.
Yes, moving
and moving to Denmark.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So let's continue the story. All right. So in June of 1999, Peter is free from prison.
Okay.
On June 4th, he returns to his homeland and touches down in Copenhagen at the airport. Weren't we there?
We were in Copenhagen.
Okay, I couldn't remember if we flew there.
Yeah, that's where you arrive when you go there. That's where we flew into. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey. So after he arrives in Denmark, he moves to Malav to be with his wife, Tina, and her teen daughter.
Okay.
So, like, why would that woman do this?
I don't know. It's exciting.
The thing is, it's
he's a heartthrob, though. He's an American heartthrob. Yeah,
if it was just her... And she just wanted to live this crazy life and marry this prisoner and stuff. But like to move him in with her daughter.
Yeah.
It seems just downright irresponsible.
Yeah. I agree.
But anyway, the happy marriage did not last long because in the fall of 1999, just a few months after he had gotten to Denmark, a violent fight with his wife breaks out. So him and his wife get in this huge fight and she ends up kicking him out.
Okay.
And she's done with him.
Yeah.
Which is probably a really good decision on her part.
Yeah.
So he has nowhere to go. So he ends up moving into a men's home. So it's like the halfway house and it was in Norrebro.
Okay.
That is one of the districts of Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And I was trying to remember because we were trying to, like, I remember when we were trying to figure out where to stay and everything.
Yeah.
That sounded familiar.
Oh,
this
yeah.
place.
I think that's where that food area was.
Okay. That makes sense because I was reading about it and it says today it's one of like the hippest, like trendy, artsy places.
Park
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Norrebro.
So we went to the place where this guy lived in a halfway house.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, some of the places that the food area with all the train cars and everything. It kind of looked like a halfway house.
Yeah, it did. What was that place called?
I cannot remember now. Leah, my sister, wouldn't remember.
It was very cool.
She loves pictures of that place.
Yeah, she loves pictures. So while living in this men's home, he decided to go out one night and peruse the local brothel scene. What else is a single guy to do in Denmark?
Single homeless guy.
A single homeless murderer.
Yeah.
He ends up meeting 36-year-old Marianne Pedersen. So Marianne was working at the brothel. She and her late husband had opened the brothel as well as a massage parlor. And then her husband had passed away the previous year. So Marianne was just working at this brothel and raising her two sons, Dennis and Brian.
Wow. So she's what an environment to
grow working
up
hard.
In.
Yeah. So upon meeting Marianne, there was an instant attraction and the two quickly began a relationship and he moved in with her and her sons.
Wait, was the attraction like based on an illicit event or?
Probably, okay. But I don't know.
Because it sounds like they were just like on a date and love at first sight.
Maybe it was. Okay. I don't know. And they moved. He moved in with her too, and she lived in Rodovre.
Rodovre.
Is that right?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway.
When you hear people speak Danish, it's
interesting.
So garbled. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I visited Denmark in 2013, a distant cousin of mine who is about roughly my folks' age, like that generation, and she asked me, she was talking with a friend of hers, and I was just kind of like there for the conversation for a while. And she turns to me and she says in English, she said, what does Danish sound like to you, you know, since you don't know it? And I said, I said, it sounds like you're speaking English, but playing a tape backwards, like you're playing it in reverse.
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, it's an interesting language. It's mm-hmm. very influenced by a lot of European, older European like languages, and it's because I can hear German and kind of make things out. It doesn't sound like that. It's totally different. It's
Yeah.
It's just weird. So anyway, don't feel bad about not knowing how to do.
Oh, thank you.
I asked her how to pronounce my last name. My last name is Knudsen.
Yeah.
Knudsen. And she said, well, you would say that Knudsen. Knudsen. So just faster, I guess.
Faster without also, opening your mouth.
Yeah, without a D really accented. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. Okay, so he moves in with this woman and her sons.
Okay.
You know, so he's, I feel like he's kind of using these women.
Oh, yeah.
Just like looking for a place to stay.
Yeah.
So from the fall of 1999 until the summer of 2000, everything seems to be going great. Mm. You know, the happy family just living in Rodover. Until early July of 2000, when Marianne's stepson had been unable to reach anyone in the family. So he eventually went to Marianne's home and found a note taped to her front door saying that they had gone on vacation. However, he was suspicious because the wording did not sound like his stepmother. So I'm not sure what was written on the note, but he was just like, this doesn't seem like something she would write. Yeah. So when he went inside, he found that their house had been completely ransacked. There was trash and blood everywhere. And so on July 3rd, he reported them missing to the police.
Wow.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So when arriving at the house, the police found more blood in Marianne's car, the bathroom, and in the kitchen in a blender and on a chopping block, as well as in the garage and the basement. So they went to where Peter had been staying. Apparently, by this time, he had moved out into his own place. Maybe they were having like some issues by this point. And he told the police that the family was indeed on vacation. And that he had been painting their house while they were away.
With blood?
Painting it with blood. So, anyway, the police didn't buy it.
Yeah.
You know. And 2 days later, he was arrested and charged with the murders of Marianne and her sons.
Oh.
So, upon further investigation at the Pedersen home, the police determined that one of the family members had been killed in the basement and the other two in the garage, and that an axe had most likely been used as the murder weapon.
Wow.
So after sitting in jail for a few weeks, Peter realized that he needed to come up with a more believable story. So this is when he told police that while he was sleeping one night, he heard screams coming from the basement. He ran down to see what was going on.
I'm sure he wanted to help, yeah.
Well, yeah, definitely. He's just that kind of guy. And he discovered that Marianne had killed her sons with a knife while in a drug-induced stupor.
Okay.
So he was so angry that, in his own words, he struck her, but not severely. Hmm. And she just happened to die.
With it, struck her with his hand?
But okay. Not severely, though.
Okay. He tapped her and she passed away.
And I feel like, wasn't this the same story that he had about killing his mother?
Oh, yeah.
But didn't he, like, shove her lightly and she just...
Yeah, she just fell into a stranglehold of some mysterious nature.
So that was his story. And then he said he was so freaked out by the whole incident that instead of calling the police, he took matters into his own hands and decided to chop up the bodies and put them in an incinerator.
It's a responsible thing to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, what would you have done?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Instead of calling the police, oh, don't bother them with this.
No, they don't want it. They have bigger fish to fry.
Clean up my mess, yes.
However, just 3 months later, on October 10th, 2000, Peter confessed to killing the whole family. He said that in early July, he had heard Marianne on the phone with another man. He got angry because she was like flirting with this guy. Mm. And they got in a huge argument, which resulted in him strangling her and breaking her neck.
So and that's his method of choice, really.
That's what he, yeah.
When he flies into his rage.
Well, he said that he then, you know, in the fit of blind rage, he then proceeded to kill her sons the same way.
Wow.
So there were still holes in this story because the evidence at the scene didn't support this manner of death. Also, they
right, all the blood, yeah.
Right, and they just...
Well, unless he... I mean, he strangled them.
Right,
because,
I mean, he admitted to chopping them up anyway. But they also discovered that back in June, about 2 weeks before the family was reported missing, there was evidence that Peter had bought murder supplies at a local store, including gloves, plastic bags, cleaning supplies, and an axe.
Was it like a murder supply store?
Yes.
Okay.
Murder Depot.
I've never heard the term murder supplies. Yes, I'd like to get my Instacart driver to get me some murder supplies.
Just give me a pack of murder supplies. I always thought it'd be funny to like go to Walmart or something and just buy like all this stuff and see if they say anything.
Because like they track that sometimes, right?
Yeah.
In certain cities and stuff.
Or if like see if the cashier would be like, so what are you up to tonight?
No, nothing. Just dinner.
Just dinner. So they know he's... And this was 2 weeks before the murders happened.
Right.
So this is clearly like...
Premeditated.
Premeditated, yeah. So the trial ends up beginning on March 5th of 2001.
Is the legal system in Denmark the same as the U.S. where the penalty for premeditation is higher than... Spontaneous murder?
Yes, I believe. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Because, and I'll kind of get to that. But another thing about this is they never found their bodies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So.
And he obviously never told them.
No. They suspect that he incinerated some and then like maybe like went around and like put other body parts.
Okay.
In random like landfills or whatever.
Beaches.
Beaches, yeah.
Maybe he learned his lesson about that.
So the trial begins in March of 2001, and Peter went to trial sticking with his blind rage defense because, like you mentioned, obviously, I just lost my mind and I snapped is better than, you know, planning this out weeks beforehand.
Right.
But in the end, the jury found him guilty of both premeditated murder and manslaughter.
Hmm.
So I'm not exactly sure... where that manslaughter fits in, but...
What does manslaughter mean?
It means you killed somebody, but it was like, I guess, sort of like
crime
an
of
accident sort of a thing, or maybe like you meant to hurt somebody, but maybe not kill them. Hmm. I think there's a lot of different, but I mean, this doesn't seem like it should have been manslaughter.
No.
Cause, I mean, he for sure meant to kill all these people. Anyway, so, Peter's defense team attempted to get him a sentence of no more than 16 years. However, the judge sentenced him to life on March 15th of 2001. And so Peter's father, you remember Ole?
Yeah.
From part one.
Good old Ole.
Good old Ole. So Ole, you know, had moved back to Denmark many years before Peter did. And although he was never found to have anything to do with this murder, he was arrested for having a bunch of Marianne's stolen items in his possession. So I don't know if Peter like gave him this stuff or if he stole it, but he ended up being sentenced to 4 months in prison in June of 2002. So in February of 2002, while Peter was in prison serving his life sentence, he was beaten by several inmates with a frying pan.
Wow.
He survived, and later he sued the prison and was given 510 Danish kroner. And how much is that? Do you know?
Oh, I think it's like $30 or something.
Oh, for real?
Well,
that's crazy. I thought it'd be way more than that.
I could be going the opposite way with my calculation. I do. All I remember is that I thought when I got there in visiting this relative of mine in 2013, I thought I had a lot of money, and then when I left, I realized it was not a lot of money. Not
you
because
had $30.
Not because my calculation about the value was wrong, but because everything was so extremely expensive. So I'm going to convert this right now.
And I was going to convert it, and then I was like, ah, oh, Lewis will probably know.
Oh, $80.
Really?
So, yeah.
Maybe that's wrong. I swear that's what it said, but
yeah,
maybe I'm...
It's not very good compensation.
Because I think he had sued them for like, it was like $10,000
sure.
or something.
Yeah.
Okay. That would be funny if they gave him $80. So
it's almost like an insult, you know, like here's $80, yeah. 510 kroner.
For getting beat in the head with a frying pan. Right. So do you think Peter's love life slowed down while he was in prison?
Not a chance.
No. So in the fall of 2008, Peter married a woman named Marianne Poulsen while he was behind bars. However, she divorced him less than 2 weeks later when she discovered that he was cheating on her with another woman.
From prison?
I have no idea how these prisons work in Denmark.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Unless he was maybe like writing like love letters or something.
Real good letters. Yeah. Just very, very passionate.
I mean, he's known for his letters. They're usually about, you know,
he's
wanting
away
to
with words.
Kill people, but yeah, who knows? So, but then in the spring of 2011, he married another woman named Bettina. And they were married until 2017.
Wow.
So he was married to this woman for a pretty long time.
I wonder how often you get to see someone when they have a life sentence.
I don't know. I wonder if they have
Denmark.
Like conjugal visits in Denmark.
Yeah.
I don't know. Huh. Something to look into.
Yeah.
During their marriage, Peter had changed his name to Niels Schaffner. Schaffner was his mother's maiden name.
Okay.
So I'm
he
assuming
just
that's why.
To avoid the...
Yeah, probably, you know. But since he has changed it again to, I can't pronounce it, Bjarni Skjernborg.
That's probably Bjarne. Like Bjorn. Let me see this. Bjarni.
Here.
Okay, she's going to show me the name here. Bjarne Skjernborg. Skjernborg. Wow. Why did he change it again?
He just didn't like Niels Schaffner, I guess. Wait, how do you say that?
Bjarne.
Bjarne.
Like, yeah. The reason I know that is because that the guy who was the reason that my uncle found this cousin in Denmark, the guy that's an expert on like Danish American genealogy research, his name was Bjarne.
Interesting. Yeah. Was it this guy?
I don't know.
Maybe that's what he's been up to in prison.
He wasn't in prison. He was running around everywhere, but.
That's funny.
It's probably a common name.
Bjarne Skjernborg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I wonder why Skjernborg.
Maybe you just liked it.
It just has a ring to it. And he is currently housed at the institution of Herstedvester in Albertslund, Denmark.
Wow.
So that's...
Why did they get divorced, his last wife?
Who knows?
Because they were together for such a long time.
Yeah, they were together for 6 years. He was probably cheating on her and running around with other women.
From prison. Yeah. So weird.
So yeah, that's the story.
Wow.
Of Peter London.
And he's still alive.
Yeah, he's still alive.
Yeah, how old is he?
So he was born in 72.
Okay.
So he would be like 49.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. So we should like write to him.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, we can try.
No, I don't. I don't want to get caught up in all that.
Yeah, that's probably good.
All right. So that's the part two. I hope that it wasn't, you know, too long.
No, it was great. Thank you for the crime.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for the coffee.
Sure thing.
This coffee's amazing. And definitely check out Coffee Apothecary in Bettendorf.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Well, you all, you know, just have a good day out there. And we will take our coffee
with crime.